Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land in which our food is grown. I'm joined today by Justin Calverley. Justin is a horticultural consultant, an educator, designer, and Triple R and ABC radio star. Used to be on Triple R a lot. You had your own show for 14 years, Justin?
Yeah, long time ago.
And now comes on as our guest expert in horticulture, etc. Justin's also an author of The Urban Farmer and The Urban Food Forester. And these books are about growing food sustainably in urban environments. I met Justin a few years ago when I did his excellent introduction to horticulture course at Edendale Farm in Eltham. So welcome, Justin.
Thanks for having me, Anne. Great to be in here.
It's great to have you. I remember one of my first lessons from you was about how much water is needed to grow food, and how, and it was much more than I thought. And we had a little practice session and we were watering and I kept going, everyone was going, is that enough? And you're going, no, more, more. Can you talk a little bit about water in just backyard gardens?
It's obviously a vital ingredient for supporting life. Water is our most valuable resource. And as gardeners, I think sometimes if we don't understand the full picture of understanding our microclimate or understanding our soil type, understanding full site assessment, that we can actually waste it by not delivering enough, which is a weird sentence to say. if you're not maximizing every single drop and we're wasting it, you have plants that underperform because they're not getting quite enough water, which affects our yields. And sometimes that can put people off. Now, I'm in the business of trying to encourage more and more people to grow food, to have a go themselves. But if, you know, for people starting out, if they don't see the rewards early on, they can tend to give it up. And so watering being one of the main factors of why we have success, or I don't want to say failure, varying levels of success in growing food, water is definitely one of the major factors because we don't fully hydrate our soils.
So how do you know when your soil's fully hydrated?
So this is where, you know, we're going to get some rain today, and we had some rain the other day. The simplest way is you have to interact with your garden. You have to get out into that soil and just use your hand and scratch it down. So maybe half an hour after a rain event, or when you think, if you've been watering by hand or had the sprinklers on, half an hour after that, go out and just have a little scratch around in the soil and just watch how deep it percolated. And I remember with your class, that was one of the biggest things. Like, just have a look, have a scratch. And a lot of the time I would ask the students, like, okay, we've been watering for 10 minutes. How far do you reckon it's gone down? And it, people think, nah, that's fully soaked. And half the time it's not even a knuckle deep.
That's right. It's shocking, actually, when you look at what 10 centimetres fall of rain means.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing.
Yeah. And but this is part of the thing of, you know, understanding different soil types are obviously going to absorb water at different rates. And so this is part of, you know, one of the kind of like biggest mistakes that, you know, people new to gardening need to kind of wrap their head around is soil science.
Mm-hmm. So you want to tell me about what kind of soil holds water the best and what that looks like when it's full of water.
Well, you know, without, you know, going into a full degree of soil science, and I'm not a soil scientist, I'm a horticulturalist, but, you know, basic soil types, we have our clay soils, so people in the northern suburbs would know their clay soils. Clay particles are really tiny, and so the air pockets between them are tiny. So when they're saturated, they hold water really well. Hence, we can make pottery and crockery and stuff out of clay because it's holding water and we can mold it. But then when that water leaves, or whether it transpires or drains out, that mineral content becomes really hard and tough. So very quick to become hydrophobic. And when it does, it doesn't accept water very well. So you have to deliver really slowly. So that's where people in the northern suburbs tend to go wrong. They might, you know, splash a bit of water around and think, I've been here for 5 minutes, that must be enough. And it's just run off. People down Bayside who've got sandy soils, sand particles are massive. Water drains through. We've all seen water drain through sand. And so they have kind of like the same impact, delivering the same volumes of water, and they both end up being really dry. What we know with areas that carry the most vegetation types, so think mountainous areas where there's huge amounts of vegetation, that's what creates really, you know, moisture-holding soil. So it's humus, decomposed organic matter.
So the answer's compost, right? Whatever compost. Your soil is, the answer's compost.
Organic matter of any type, really, Anne. Yep. It's like, you know, just keep putting organic matter into the soil because the humus, which is decomposed organic matter, that's what actually holds the water, not the mineral particles.
Yep. Thank you for that. Now, you said just before that you really want to encourage people to grow food. So can you talk to us about why you want to do that?
Well, you know, in all of my little roles, I'm lucky enough that I've been in horticulture for, you know, 185 years now. And the aspect of my work that's always the most fulfilling is about encouraging people to grow food. So as a consultant, you know, I'm a problem solver. That's part of it. And so that really helps me. People, you know, it's like, why do my fruit trees aren't fruiting? Here's potentially why it might be. As a designer, a lot of people are just thinking, okay, ornamental gardens, but forgetting how ornamental some edible plants are. I mean, you know, just as simple as maybe a cluster of rainbow chard can lift a winter garden like no other plant could, just because of that glossy colour. And then as an educator, people have never had a go and then have their first yield. You know, there are people out there who have never grown a lettuce or never realize that they can plant a radish seed and 6 weeks later harvest the radish, and it blows their mind. That really keeps me inspired to keep going. So all of these different roles that I do, it's just a wonderful world, inspiring people to look at the natural world and how amazing it is. And food plants are such a massive part of that. My mum always taught us, like, getting education is super important. Reading, writing, great. But if you don't have the skills to be able to produce your own, the basic skills to produce your own food, you're kind of missing out a bit.
You're missing out. Talk more about that. What are you missing out on?
Well, it's just, again, it's that empowering part. I love all plants, and I love ornamental plants just as much as, you know, as the next person. But I still get a kick out of harvesting from my garden at home. That things like, I've watched you from the start and what you've become, and now I'm harvesting from you and taking, because remember, that's what plants are all about. They're about being harvested.
Yeah.
It was way before we were even in organism, they were being harvested by other creatures. That's the whole point, is they harvest and spread seed and reproduce. So just to be part of that still gives me a buzz.
Yeah. And you don't need to analyze that. You just kind of think that must be because that's what we are.
Yeah. Well, that's part of biophilia. It's like we are part of the natural world. Yeah. And that is, you know, a function of the natural world is harvest, and everyone gets a crack. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And we've had a few shows, a few episodes about biophilia. If you want to look back at the podcasts out there and you're wondering what biophilia is, we've got a few people chatting about that in past episodes. Now, we just discussed both of our gardens before, and I've talked about how mine's just about dead and it's going to just get redone. And you talked about yours being a bit wild and weedy, which is sort of surprising it's not surprising really, but for some people would think a horticulturalist wouldn't have that. Tell us about that, and also tell us about your tomatoes that you grow along the ground, please.
Yeah, well, over the years, my gardening style has evolved, ebbed and flowed. Part of it with, you know, the, just the ebbs and flows of life. You know, as a single person, as a renter, I had different gardening techniques and different likes. When I first started in horticulture, it was very much about ornamental gardens. I had a rose collection. I had an iris collection. I still grew a bit of food because that was my upbringing. It's like you always got to grow a bit of food. But then as time has gone on, I has focused more on kind of food production, but also away from traditional horticultural practices, from my formal training, which was, you know, in hindsight, it's all about control and trying to control the natural world. Kind of like we're of a higher standing in ecological, you know, ladders, and that we can control this. And I just found it just got too overwhelming. And again, it was my mum's voice back in the day. She's, you know, all these little life lessons she taught us. She's like, you can fight nature, but you will lose. And it just kept coming back to me, and it changed my garden style. Now, in the last probably 25 years, I've just relaxed completely, and weeds run rampant in my garden, what people would perceive to be weeds. But some of them get overtaken by, I've overplanted, like pumpkin, for example, and my tomatoes that I don't stake. I don't stake any vegetables. If a plant hasn't, in my thinking, if a plant hasn't evolved tendrils to climb, then it doesn't want to climb. So if we have to stake it, we're fighting against its natural inclination.
This is radical radio. Don't stake your tomatoes. Yeah.
So then what I found when I did this experiment was not staking tomatoes. I don't pinch them out. I don't even water them. They get watered on the day that they are planted. And I prepare the soil for my tomatoes 8 weeks in advance. So 2 months in advance, big loads of water. And then I water them in on the day that I plant them. And then I walk away. I don't touch them.
Heavily mulched?
The pads mulched, all that kind of stuff. So all the prep is in before they go in the ground. Once they go in the ground, I let them go. And I just noticed that they just performed way better. They went, you know, they look straggly. And right now, because they're in, you know, I've still got some with plenty of fruit on and they're still fruiting through, but they don't look 100%. But that's actually what's supposed to happen. And they're coming to the end of their lifespan. And so now that they're having their babies, they're just drawing up whatever they possibly can, even if, because I've let them dry out and I don't water again, they actually draw the water out of themselves, out of their leaves and out of their stems.
Okay.
And so that actually enriches the flavor of the tomato. So my intent is to eat a very tasty, nutrient-dense fruit. That's my intent. But the tomatoes also got the same intent. They're trying to put every possible little bit of life force into those seeds. Remember, the tomato isn't growing flesh. The tomatoes are left gestating the seed. So they're just pumping everything into that fruit because they're an annual that's coming to end of life. So it actually enriches the flavor. Also with not staking them, because they will then move horizontally like they naturally would and spread out, the plant doesn't actually have to work as hard against gravity to pump water and nutrient up.
And it grows all those, because I tried this, it grows all these shoots, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Roots, rather, off the stem.
Yeah, you get way more lateral growth, and laterals is where, you know, plants produce their fruits. So you actually get more volume from it, but you use less resource. So that's sustainable. Again, putting the faith in the tomato knows what it's doing. You know, all the years I spent in school, great. I learnt a lot of stuff in, you know, all my horticultural training. But I think great gardeners, like if I could think of the top five gardeners I know, none of them had a day of training, but 60 years of observation.
Observation, key permaculture principle.
Yeah, just watching. Watching, trying different techniques all the time. And this is something, you know, you don't learn to garden in one season. It's a lifetime of learning. So I'm constantly learning, trying different techniques. Hence, my garden at the moment is wild. And I don't do very much work because I've got kids and running a business and all these other commitments. And the garden's fine. It may not look like everyone's ideal garden, but it's healthy.
We'll be right back after this little break.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, the voice of the community.
3CR, community radio, giving the voice to the community since 1976.
Get lost in science.
Can in to 3CR every week to hear
Beth,
Chris
and Stuart
discuss news and issues from the universe that is science.
Get informed and learn a bit more about the world around you. Lost in Science can be heard every Thursday at 8:30 in the morning and is repeated the following Tuesday at 6 a.m.
Word to the nerd. You can also download a podcast. Go to the website at www.3cr.org.au and get lost in science.
This is a Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can also visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. And you can also find all of our podcasts if you just go to 3CR Local Food Connections. Today I'm chatting with Justin Calverley about what he's learned in as a horticulturalist over the years of observation and experience. I want to go back to that idea of control that you talked about before, and I was just really struck by your mother knowing what we now know about the problems with agribusiness, capitalism, standardization, and all that stuff. Can you talk to me a little bit about your mother and what her gardening background was?
So, in short, Mum was one of 14 children that was raised in a two-bedroom house in Thornbury. And she was born in 1930. So she was number 12 out of 14 children born at the height of the Great Depression, which then followed World War, then World War II followed on from that. So her childhood was harsh, and she reminded us that frequently.
Eat your dinner.
Yeah, she's like, you have no idea what hard is. I'm one of six kids, and all of our partners in the greater family all see when we all have family dinner, us six kids, the plate is clean. It can go back on the shelf. And it's just how we were raised, like be grateful for every mouthful you get and morsel. So Mum had some basic gardening skills because her child was like, if you didn't grow it, you didn't eat. And, well, maybe they were, there was 14 of them, so they're quite a good gang who could procure what they needed to if they needed to. But, they were taught, all of those kids were taught basics of growing food, hence all of my gardening kind of stuff. My food growing stuff actually came from my mum. So again, she didn't have the science knowledge, but it was observation and handed down. Now, anyone who's ever grown anything or talked to a food gardener, everyone's got a different way of doing it and slightly little tweaks, which is great. And I always think about that and think about the people who taught me stuff. I think everyone is right just as much as everyone is wrong, because there's too many variables in different sites and different – I always teach, plants need air, light, water, nutrient and temperature. Now, the variables amongst that, especially in an urban context, is endless. So I think, every tip that you hear, put it into practice, absolutely. But at the end of the day, nature will decide and the combination will decide whether you have the success or failure.
Mm. And you talk a bit about how you've moved much more towards permaculture principles. And I imagine that's because permaculture's got such a strong emphasis on knowing your place, both metaphorically in nature, but also just literally knowing your place. Can you talk a little bit about that, the challenges of an urban environment?
Yeah. I studied permaculture a long time ago. And when I first did it, I was like, this absolutely makes sense to me. It was more of that critical thinking type of gardener, which I was originally as a young kid, and then it kind of reaffirmed it. But then even in practice, I wouldn't call myself a permaculturalist. I can design permaculture gardens. It's one skill set that I have. But there's no one way to do this, and I think that's what it all comes down to. Everyone's going to find their own way. But what I do like about what permaculture teaches is that observational skill set to look at, turn details and look at patterns and systems, and look at how making connections together, because that's how nature works. Unless you're an apex in your kingdom, you are reliant on everything else around you. And if you don't work together, you're going to get spat out pretty quickly. And I think this is where, horticulture kind of needs to pull up their socks a little bit and understand systems, because as an industry, we kind of fight it too much. So in urban areas, I think it actually becomes a little bit easier than growing big ag, which is so exposed and so reliant on so few resources. And if one little thing goes wrong, you can lose a whole harvest. I feel for farmers like no other because they're right on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in urban areas, we have more protection. Yes, we have that heat bank effect, but we can work with that. The fact that we have more microclimates means that we can grow more diverse stuff. And great institutions like you right now with this gardening show of connecting people together to share knowledge and information. And so if one little part, you know, has a failure, there's a whole network out there that can lift and support, which is the village mindset, which is where I think humans peaked, to be honest. I think I think that was a really good setup now. So the more we can kind of become little villages rather than having these farmers carry so much weight for us and so much expectation, I think it's a bit unfair. We can grow a hell of a lot more in the suburbs than what people think we do. Because we think growing food is a square meterage exercise, but I think if we're thinking three-dimensionally, we can grow a hell of a lot more in the suburbs.
Talk about that a little bit, that three-dimensional growing.
So the natural world is three-dimensional. That was part of the motivation in my second book, The Urban Food Forester, in that plants grow in layers. So as plants evolved, you know, over billions of years, one species decided, okay, I'm going to go to this height because I need this much sunlight to perform my functions and to be able to reproduce. Whatever light was left underneath that, someone else evolved to fill that pocket. And that just continued to go. Hence, we have, you know, seven different layers of a forest. Most of our food plants come from those lower levels.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that they'd never had full sunlight anyway.
Right.
And our urban areas have varying amounts of sunlight, a bit of shade in the morning or shaded in the afternoon, because the sun's a bit lower in the winter, shaded in the winter, but sunny in the summer. All of these variables are actually worked to our advantage. Now, yes, of course, it takes a fair bit of horticultural knowledge to, you know, to build that, but that is gardening.
Mm.
It's a lifetime of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't make the same mistake over and over again. Talk to different people. If you hear someone says, I have a great, you know, apricot tree, it's like, well, why? Why is it great? What's the position? What soil type is it? Start building this volume of knowledge and sharing it, like great shows like this, excuse me, in sharing all these little tidbits, and we, you know, over a lifetime, you learn to the right place, the right plant.
I'm really interested in what you're saying about these plants that we eat growing in shade because they were in a forest. Now, I know I can't grow decent cauliflower or broccoli because I've got a lot of gum trees shading my place in Warrandyte, but I can grow a lot of the sort of precursors for those plants, you know, the kind of
the poor, wild brassicas and
the poor relation, you know, the kind of bitter greens and stuff, like mustard greens and all that. So if we are going to grow that sort of thing in a food forest, are we going to have to let go of the idea of the perfect cauliflower or only grow that where we've got full sunlight? Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so it's going to have, you know, I think it's way more sustainable rather than, got to watch my language, rather than pushing that wheelbarrow full of that stuff uphill all the time, where the plant is telling you, it's like, I don't like it here. And you're in your fifth season of trying to get broccoli to grow in this spot. And it's blatantly obvious. It's telling us, like, I don't like this. But then, you know, half a metre away, you've got this wild brassica that never gets any attention, that if you've tried it, it tastes very, very similar and is actually higher nutritional value.
That's right.
Because people don't remember, like, broccoli is not natural. That it's a hybridization.
It's an engineered product.
It's an engineered product. So its nutrient level is actually kind of low. My main reason for not growing broccoli is that for a 30-week exercise for 8 seconds of joy, it's just chewing up a lot of resources and a lot of space.
Yeah.
Whereas we have wild broccoli and wild cabbage growing, it just self-seeds all over the garden.
Right.
For no effort, no resources, no additional resources, no additional effort, we get a better outcome, a better product at the end. So, yes, it's a bit of a shift in mindset, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The industry does a great job. It's like, yes, look how pretty these broccoli and these cabbages are. And then all of a sudden you take a few leaves off and there's earwigs everywhere in them. And, you know, it can be a bit disheartening. So right plant, right spot. If it's if it's telling you something, listen.
Mm-hmm.
Feedback from the natural world is very, very important.
Do you have other edible weed, so-called weeds that you eat?
So many. The list could go on. One of the ones a bit controversial is, people know onion weed or onion troequum. We grow a lot of it.
Yeah.
It's our dominant kind of, understory through the cooler season. We eat the whole lot from the bulb to the leaf to the flower to the seed. We have it in the garden. I've got a few polystyrene boxes of it. So even in the height of summer when it's died down, I know where it is and I can just go up and pull a fresh few bulbs out.
Why is it controversial, Justin?
Oh, because it's that weed thing. I was what is a weed?
It's not controversial on nutritional or safety grounds.
Some people for FODMAP, a lot of people have kind of issues with the onion and garlic family, at the higher end with that.
Uh-huh.
Like anything, just try a little bit and see how you go with it. But with our family, everyone's okay with it. It would be our dominant allium. So I don't grow garlic. We use that as a garlic substitute.
Mm-hmm.
We don't grow spring onions. We use it for that. Leeks, chives, we use it for all of those groups as a substitute. Yep. Just different parts of the plant at different times of the season because it has different flavor profiles.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about what you've spent on leeks, garlics, chives, spring onions in the supermarket over the last 10 years, we've never bought any of them. We just use this. Mm-hmm. And it's growing wild in the garden. So what is a weed? Maybe it's perception.
Mm-hmm. The thing that I'm, because my garden's a real disaster at the moment, but it's growing stacks of purslane.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, at least I got that. And that's going in everything.
Yeah, great.
So, and it's highly nutritious too.
Highly nutritious. Growing in the cracks in the concrete in the driveway right now. And it's, about half a metre wide. And there's probably six of them. Yes, the kids might run over them on their bikes a little bit. There's always a nice little, I love the little, it's got a great texture to it just to throw into a salad.
Yeah.
And like with most of the classic weeds, the nutritional value is very high.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to my mum's upbringing, they didn't eat anywhere near as much food. But the nutrition of what they did eat was really, really high.
Yep.
So growing up with our fruit trees, mum was always like, thin the fruit out. We had a lot of fruit trees. And I'm like, why are you picking them out? She's like, give me one bucket of beautiful stuff rather than 20 buckets of crap.
Yeah.
Because you get more nutrition from it. And so a lot of people's diets these days, just a lot of empty stuff. And to savor, stop, pick a fruit or pick a vegetable straight off the plant and eat it right then and there, that's living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's also nourishing your body just as much as if you prepared it in some other special way. All right, what have we got? We've got another 3 minutes.
That's truth.
I know.
Been banging on.
No, it's been great. It's been great, the banging on. What else? Another thing you said I've remembered a lot of what you said there, and that was a long time. I think that was before the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff's going to die.
Mm.
So actually, go back to the tomatoes. When your tomatoes die off, does all the material go back in the soil? Do you just dig it all back in or just leave it on top?
I just leave it on top.
And then you put more organic stuff?
A bit more no-dig, a bit more compost or worm castings and, whatever mulch. But I even use I'll go and prune some herbs, whatever, to use as mulch.
Uh-huh.
So we are pretty much a closed system. So I'm just looking for what's around to chop and drop, go mm-hmm. back in. I don't pull the root systems out mm-hmm. for annuals. I just let them continue to die in the soil. They're feeding the soil food web. There's a whole ecosystem happening down there. So I try not to disturb it. And that's what keeps the hydration levels really well. Because I have absolute cover, that's why I don't weed, much to my wife's
horror.
Horror. She hates it. She's like, I can't believe. And my neighbours, when they walk past, they're like, Justin, I can't believe you teach this stuff. But they see the harvest that comes out. Yeah. And they're like, you just sit on the porch, maybe you're having a beer. But how do you get all these pumpkins and these tomatoes? And it's completely wild. So the system is healthy because I leave plants in the soil.
And you leave the seeds germinate the next season? You don't replant them?
That's right, yeah.
So, and they germinate wherever they've spread to?
Wherever they've gone to. So who am I to argue?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think about, so six little pumpkin seedlings will pop up somewhere. And I just think, well, where's the other 50 that came out of that pumpkin? They didn't make it. That's natural attrition.
Yeah.
those sticks, and this is for any home gardener, whatever you've see self, something self-seed, just let it go. Don't touch it. Don't water it. Don't do anything. And just watch what happens. Mm-hmm. They'll be your best ones.
Uh-huh.
I'll guarantee it.
There you go, everyone. If you want to look into that, we've got another, we had another gardener on, and the subject of that podcast is called Wild Edible Gardens. So listen to that one too, because they had some interesting things to say. That's all we got time for, Justin. Thank you so much for coming in.
Pleasure to see you again.
This you've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR, and today we've been speaking with Justin Calverley. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus, take care of each other. If you value independent media, please donate or become a 3CR subscriber. 3CR depends on audience subscriptions to continue to broadcast. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more radical radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.